Wait. Hold on a minute here. What? I'm 50? How the heck did that happen? Hey, everyone. I'm Dr. Cindy, and welcome to Reignite Your Flame, the program where we will be discussing moving into our second half a century with grace and joy and lots of humor. Because, let's face it, you really gotta have a good sense of humor going into that second half of the century, right? All right, I'll see you guys back in a few with today's episode. Greetings, everyone. It's Dr. Cindy here, and welcome to another episode of Reignite Your Flame. This week, I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Sasheen Mobley.
Hello!
She is an Amazon best-selling author and the, I love this, the creatrix-in-chief of Living and Loving Your Best Communications, LLC. Now, Dr. Sasheen has written several books. The latest book, Who Do You Love? Four Faces of Narcissism. And that explores the world of narcissistic relationships, and that is now currently available on Amazon. And she also is the host of her own podcast. It's a relationship podcast called So You're Getting Divorced, the podcast. And I believe that this is based on her first book by the same name, So You're Getting Divorced, right? And yes. She's here with us today to share her journey through divorce and moving on, and then also give us some tips on what to do to kind of reignite that flame after you go through all of those flames of a toxic relationship. So, Dr. Sasheen, tell us please how you came to this point.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Dr. Sasheen, and I thank you so much for having me, Dr. Cindy. I really appreciate it. How did I come to this point? Well, it started with my own divorce. I had gotten married, and we'd had a child, and I had a two-year-old, and I found myself suddenly single, in that I decided to end my relationship. And so, in the course of ending that relationship, I'm a very process-oriented person, but the thing about getting married and divorced and having babies is that none of this stuff comes with a manual, right? So what you start thinking is that you are in this place and there's no roadmap to get out. There's no roadmap through trauma. There's no roadmap through bad marriages. There's just a lot of, you know, e-Hollywood TV stories and bad Lifetime movies, but there's no real place that you can go and go to say, did anybody else go through this besides me? Or am I the only one who experienced this? Because what I found when I was going through my own divorce was that no one was really talking about it in the way that I needed to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so I felt very alone and isolated in some ways. Because the experience of divorce, while it may be extraordinarily personal, is actually, it's universal. Breakup is universal. Heartache is universal. But when you say divorce, there's this stigma that just kind of sucks to you. And people don't talk about it in the same way they do if you, say, lost a loved one, or even if your spouse has passed away or something of that nature. But it's like, okay, you can't feel those same things because you got divorced. And that's just different. It's really not. A relationship is a relationship is a relationship. And though marriage can be wonderful, they end 40% of the time. And so we all know someone who's gotten divorced and probably don't know enough about their story because they just don't know how to talk about it. So I was like, you know what? I'm feeling kind of pitiful and I need somebody to listen to me. So I jumped on YouTube and I started making videos. And I started just talking about what I was going through, the things that were important to me. And what I figured out going through kind of the doldrums of it was that what I really wanted to talk about, what was really important to me, was to create a space for women to walk into where, yes, it's messy and it's hard, but you're not actually as messy as you think you are. You're actually probably more okay than you believe you are. And that really started my reignition of the woman on the other side of divorce. Because I kept feeling like, but do I have to go through the doldrums? Like, is there a rule that says you have to suffer for X number of time before you can move on? Or could I just say, not suffer? And maybe, you know, shorten the suffering period. And I make light of it. But there were some dark days in there. So I started my YouTube channel. I did this video called Five Things. I just re-released it on my podcast, but it's the five things that I understood to be true. And it took me a long time to figure out what those five things were. But in working through those five things that I call them my five simple truths to freedom, man, my whole world just kind of opened up and kind of shifted and changed. And I started to do the things that were necessary for me to get ahead and to heal in my time. Because I was someone who didn't actually need to process my divorce. I was getting divorced. I knew that. There's nothing left to process. So I didn't need to process that. What I needed to process was what it meant to be a single mother now, what it meant to be on my own with this small baby, and what that's supposed to look like, and how do you make friends when you're 40 plus with a two-year-old? Where do you go? Where do you live? How do you start to rebuild a life? That's where I needed to go. And so that's what I started to do. And I have this technique that I use whenever I'm stuck for inspiration or direction, is I just grab a stack of post-it notes and I begin sticking them on my wall. I usually have a very blank wall somewhere, and I just start writing my thoughts on these post-it notes on a wall until I have basically just kind of verbally thrown up everything inside of me. And then I start taking away the things that really aren't true about where I am now. They might have been true 5 minutes ago, even 2 years ago, not really true about where I am now. And in that process, I can start to see where I'm actually at. And I can start to see where I'm going. So I did that in my little apartment in Kittitas, Washington, tucked in the Pacific Northwest, small town with my little two-year-old. And that process took me 3,000 miles to the East Coast, where I now live in New York. And it brought me to writing books and doing a podcast about divorce being messy, but how we all just don't have to be a mess about it. That's kind of my story.
Wow. Now, you had your son when you were 39.
It did. Oh. Advanced maternal age is what they call it.
How scary was that for you to have that baby and then realize that, wow, this relationship is not working, and find the courage to actually leave the relationship with having a small child? Because, you know, what I find is that a lot of women stay in a relationship that they're not happy with because they think they're doing it for the children, because they have the children, they're young, they're afraid, how are they going to be able to support these kids by themselves? So how did you work through that? And I mean, you moved 3,000 miles away.
I did.
That is a huge change when you have to be, you know, responsible for this tiny human. I mean, it's one thing to do it just by yourself.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, it's a great question. I was used to moving my own stuff. I'd come to Washington State having just come off living a year in the Caribbean. So I'd lived in Puerto Rico for a year. And before that, I had lived in the Midwest, where I'd gone to school to get my doctorate. And so I was used to reinventing myself in certain ways and moving on. But all of a sudden at 39, 38, I found out I was pregnant. And at 39, I had this amazing little boy. And then fear set in. Because you're right, there's something inherently just terrifying all of a sudden about, well, I can screw up my own life, but I should probably not screw up his life if at all possible. And so I did a lot of work with my ex-husband attempting to save our marriage. And I used to say, and I would never say this now, but at the time, looking back, I completely understand why I did. I used to say, if he can't be a good husband, if he would just be a good father. And I think a lot of women do that. Mm-hmm. I can live with the not great husband if he will just be a good father. And unfortunately, the reality is, if they're not a good husband, chances are they're probably not going to be a great dad either. And so I just decided that I had a couple of options here. I could strike out on our own and pray and plan and organize and strategize, but give my son the best possible footing that he could have, or and really mold his understanding of love and respect and relationships. Or I could stay and hope that he would let me pay for therapy when he got older from all that he had to endure as a child. So I decided therapy was probably gonna be really expensive if I stayed. And so I made the leap, and it took a year of careful planning. And then it took another year of battling it out in court. And when I decided, so I'm not a halfway kind of girl. When I decide it's time to do something, I just kind of go all in. Like, I jump in feet first and I take it as far as I can take it. And so some people might have moved, you know, one state over or something of that nature. Nope, I decided that an entirely different coast was the perfect place to start again. And so that's how I ended up going 3,000 miles away. Also, because I wrote So You're Getting Divorced as a kind of a help guide, but I wrote Who Did You Love? Four Faces of Narcissism to talk about the real stuff of relationship, the kind of people that you deal with. And I was married to one, and I wanted to get that out there. I wanted people to understand, like, I know what this is like. And I knew that the farther I could go, the better off I would be, as with my son, as with my child.
Now you still have to correspond with your ex, mm-hmm. though, right? Because you are co-parenting.
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
How difficult is that for you with mm-hmm. with you guys both now being bi-coastal? So you mm-hmm. you know, now yes. now you have a 2-year-old. And when he goes to visit his dad, he's going 3,000 miles away.
He is. Well, and at the time when we finally left Washington, he was 3 going on 4. Mm-hmm. He's now 7 going on 8. We've been in New York for 4 years now. Mm-hmm. What I have found is that distance is a beautiful thing. And it was probably the single best decision that I ever made was distance. Second to getting the divorce. Mm-hmm. The second best decision I ever made was the distance, because the type of person that I was married to required that kind of what some might see as over the top response, but I understood who I was married to. And so therefore I understood that in divorce, I would see those same characteristics, if not worse. So the best thing I could do was to give myself the space to mm-hmm. live, for us just to have a normal life. And so that's why I did that. And we co-parent. I won't say fine, but we co-parent, and distance becomes a really beautiful thing when you have issues of co-parenting.
Mm-hmm. Now, do and you I think have, it's a lot. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I think for a lot of women, there's this fear that, well, if I move too far away, then there won't be a relationship with the other parent, or, you know, there, how do I keep this kind of pseudo family structure so the child doesn't feel like they don't have one or both of us. And what I say to things like that is, you have to understand who you were married to. If that person that you were married to is the kind of person that you can live the next state over and you honestly can co-parent together, then that's what you do. But if you're assuming that divorce will take the person who wasn't such a great parent and turn them into a better parent now that you're gone, you're deluding yourself.
Yeah, I believe that as women, we do tend to have that thought that we can change the person that we're with, right? We tend to, when we're dating, we do have the little red flags, but we overlook them because we feel, oh, once we're in the relationship, we can change this person. But then when we're in the relationship, we realize there's no changing someone. And I think the older that person is, the more difficult it is too for them to even acknowledge that they have issues.
Agreed. 100%. My husband and I were both in our mid-30s when we met and got married, and then we had our son. And it was very apparent that the things that were probably going to be difficult to live with were going to only get more difficult to live with. They weren't going to get any easier. And I did fight that illusion that a lot of women fall into. You're so right. Thinking that, well, if I'm not around, maybe if I remove myself from this equation, then the parenting aspect will get better. And it didn't. So I just, you're so right. When we think if we somehow can change our behavior or our circumstances or the environment that we are creating, then we can help someone else see their greatness, see how good they can be. And we sell ourselves a very large bill of goods that ultimately in the end only hurts ourselves. We could talk a long time.
I don't have children myself, so I can, you know, I can't, I don't have that personal experience to go by, but I have friends who do have children, and my significant other also has children, and I've seen what divorce does to their relationship, and sometimes the relationship that they have with their children. So yeah, that's one of the reasons I was asking about that huge distance. But I I understand exactly what you're saying, because if the other person is so toxic that it's going to create, let's see, how do I want to put this? You want to raise your children in a way that shows them what a healthy relationship is with the opposite sex, right? And staying, or with a partner. I shouldn't even say the opposite sex, but with a partner, right? And so if you stay with your partner just for the sake of the pair, of the child, and it's not a healthy relationship, then that's what you're teaching your child, that this is a type of relationship that's acceptable for you to have.
And I did not want that. That's it, exactly. And I think it's really important, whether you have children or you don't have children, you know, we work out so much of what we were raised to believe in a relationship. We work out our stuff on each other. And I just knew I didn't want him to be working out his stuff that I had given him 20 years from now, and looking around going, why didn't you do something? Like, why do I have to work this out? Why didn't you work this out? So I was trying to break some of that generational curse that we talk about a lot. From going forward.
I think that's one good thing about the younger generations, right? As we, you know, we learn looking at our parents and seeing what they did. Right. And what they've taught us. So we want to change. And then our children see what we've done and what their grandparents have done. And hopefully they make different choices moving forward.
That is the hope. Yeah, that is the hope. I hope that he makes better choices than I did.
So your new book, you talk about narcissism and narcissistic relationships. So could you speak to that a little bit to our listeners so that they know what things to look for when they meet someone? Because I'm sure that when you're in a relationship with a narcissist, it's probably pretty difficult to extricate yourself from it once you get in, because
yes,
they do have that way to erode your self-confidence. So what would you say would be the red flags that should go off for you if you're dating someone who's a narcissist?
Well, that's a really great question. One of the things that I think in the book, I try to break this down into four different levels of narcissism. And I talk about them distinctly because it's easier to get out of one versus a different kind. Mm-hmm. And so like level one, easier than level four. And I have four levels. But the common denominator is that narcissists have a disconnect with reality. And they tend to see the world strictly from their own viewpoint. And we can say that, oh, this person's just not very self-aware, or this person's just not very self-reflexive. They don't really see themselves as part of the fabric. That's not narcissism. That's just, you know, people who are selfish. And that's true. Selfish people are selfish. They're not necessarily narcissists. They're just selfish. But narcissists are master manipulators. And if you feel like you're being manipulated, chances are you are being manipulated. When your worldview is turned back at you so that you begin to question and doubt, and it's done over and over and over again, you don't want to ignore that. You don't want to go, well, maybe this person has a point. Well, maybe they do, but you've probably had enough friends in your life who could have told you this very same thing and haven't. So what makes this person the authority on you all of a sudden, to the point where you're questioning who you are? And that's usually a huge giveaway that you're dealing with someone whose job it is to get you around to their way of thinking, to bring you into the world as they see it, so that you're much easier and much more malleable to mold and manipulate. And again, I argue that there are these four different levels that are easier to get out of, but they all have that same thing in common. They all understand the power of persuasion and manipulation, and they're really good at it. And so if you get into a relationship with a narcissist and you're like, how did I get here? Well, you don't really have a lot of choice sometimes, because they're really good at what they do. They don't wear a big neon sign that says, hey, I'm a narcissist, stay away. Because they understand how to play human emotions so well, they play people like finely tuned machines. And they just keep filling with you and filling with you until they get you to play the tune they want you to play. But we do tend to feel like something is wrong. And I always say, never discount that feeling that's like, well, he got really mad at me and slammed the phone down and he's over there having a fit. And I don't really want to call him back. I don't want to apologize. I didn't do anything wrong. Then don't. Then don't call and don't apologize and hold on to that sense that you didn't do anything wrong. Or, well, she is really mean to me, and I don't really like the way that she criticizes me all the time. And I feel really good about myself when I don't talk to her. Then stop talking to her. Because the minute you begin to re-engage, they understand that they found the hook. Mm-hmm. They have found your spot where they can just slowly begin to reel you in. And it's easy to go, well, this is a one-time thing. It's just, you know, people are different. But again, I will point out to you that people have known you for many, many, many years. And if they haven't pointed these things out to you, or they haven't used who you are against you, and they know you better than anyone, what makes this person so special? Why would you give this person more weight than people who've known you for years? Love is not blind, but it can sometimes be really deaf to what it's hearing. So,
yeah, and I should say also to my listeners that, you know, this doesn't just apply to romantic relationships. This could be any relationships that you have, whether it's friendships or working relationships. Mm-hmm. But we're specifically talking about the romantic relationships, just because that usually is the most difficult one to leave, because we've kind of invested so much into it that we feel almost like a failure.
Yes.
If we actually work with
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
I work with women. Part of what I do is divorce coaching and divorce support for women who are coming out of divorce, especially if they've been married to a narcissist. And the one kind of refrain I hear a lot is, I don't understand why I let this happen to me. I don't understand why didn't I just leave? I don't understand why I didn't, like, I'm a smart, intelligent, articulate, beautiful woman. How on earth did I not see this coming? And once I saw it, how on earth could I not? And I have to remind women, especially women, men too, but especially women, we are programmed to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. We are programmed to look at the situation and find the best in it, regardless of if it's actually any good. That's what we're programmed to do. And so the fact that you did that doesn't make you a bad person or weak or foolish or silly. You are dating a sociopath. It is their job to find your weakness and use it against you. How do you stand up to that? You can't. And chances are, and this is why I wrote the book in this way, because you're right, Cindy, because chances are you have been groomed in your life by other narcissists. You have encountered them in friends and coworkers and parents and boyfriends and girlfriends and bosses. And so when you run up against them in your romantic life, unless you have actually sat down and said, okay, I understand this about myself and who I am and what I need, and I can push back against things that don't feel right. Most of us just aren't that self-aware. Mm-hmm. We fall in love. We don't fall in pragmatic like. We fall head over heels because it feels good. We don't know until much later that there was nothing behind that feeling, that we were being used. And so we have to give ourselves a bit of a break, because we actually don't know all the signs of narcissists. We don't know them. They're not on the street corner with a neon sign, like I keep saying. We don't know them until we're in love with them. And then we have to start the extrication process of getting away from them. And you're right, it can take a long time and it can linger. And narcissists, especially when you get further up the food chain, they're brutal. They know exactly, you are their best subject. They have spent a lot of time studying how to get you to do what they want. And in the end, when they can't get you to do that anymore, they know how to hurt you, because they know exactly what your weaknesses are, because you've been their best subject. So we have to give ourselves a bit of a break and understand that you didn't do anything wrong by falling in love with someone who ultimately turned out to be horrifying. All you did was fall in love. You didn't know. No one of us knew. Nobody knows. I'd like to tell you that somebody knows. Nobody knows. They're lying to you if they tell you that they know. They don't know. They don't know. I could tell you tomorrow that I'll never love another narcissist again, and I can guarantee you that that's 100% inaccurate. Now, will I look for the signs and hope to do better? Well, of course, I wrote a darn book about it. But I think it's really important to just recognize that when you're dealing with master manipulators, we talk about people having a master class at something. They're so good at it. A true narcissist is so good that you don't even know what's happening to you. You simply don't.
So what would your advice be to someone who is starting, who may be in a relationship for a long time, and they're now realizing that, I'm involved with a narcissist. How do I extricate myself from this situation and do it safely?
That's a great question. And do it safely. And that's a great question. You have to understand your partner. I like to remind the women that I work with that, so just as they have studied you, you know them. You know the playbook, because it's been used against you over and over and over again. And so what you have to start to do is turn the playbook over and begin to use it to your advantage, especially if you're in a volatile situation. One of the scenarios is narcissists give you a lot of bluster and a lot of threats and a lot of verbal shenanigans, as I like to say, but they're usually all more bluster than they are action. And so by beginning to take the necessary actions, of removing yourself from the situation, you're going to find that they become like this wild and crazy person. But the more you act in your own best interest, the less they care, which is hurtful in some ways, but it works to your advantage, because the less they can manipulate you, the less they actually care about you. When you begin to show strain, they begin to back off. Now, that's for certain narcissists. There are some whom you're going to have to do more permanent legal action against to get them to go away. But there are a large swath of narcissistic people who really only want you if you're doing what they say, if you're able to be molded. And so once you begin to realize, I want out, and begin to go, okay, I'm going to start doing this, this, and this, this, and this, and this, and this, they lose interest in you. They just don't want to be with you because you're not what you used to be. And they're going to flail and try to burn the house down on the way out the door and say horrible things. And they might even try to sabotage your attempts to move, but they begin to get less and less interested in you. And so I always say the first thing that you need to do is sit down and make a plan of exit. And then one day at a time, every step until you're walking out the door, you put that plan into action. And you keep putting it into action, even when they start to act like a poltergeist ripping through your house, trying to knock everything over because they're mad at you for leaving, you still continue to, because the poltergeist becomes the two-year-old throwing a temper tantrum, which then becomes the baby squalling in a crib someplace because they, you know, want attention. That becomes the mouse whispering in the hallway that you don't even pay attention to anymore because you're so far ahead of this now that you're no longer impacted by it. That can take weeks, that can take months, that can take years. It's really how deeply entrenched in a relationship you are and how fast you want to get out.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say to someone who's worried about feeling that mm-hmm. they've failed and that's the reason why they don't want to leave?
Yeah.
I mean, how would you tell them to address this fear of change?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a big proponent of talking to someone who has no vested interest in your relationship. I am a huge proponent of talk therapy. I'm a good psychotherapist, a good psychologist, a good counselor. And because your mental health is so important at that moment. It is so important at that moment. And you don't have the strength to give yourself that confidence. So what you need to do is go, sorry, there's a door open. I apologize. What you need to do is go pay someone, however you need to do it. Don't pick one of your good friends. They can't do it for you. Your best girlfriend, she can't do it for you because she is so invested in making you feel better that she's going to do whatever she can to help. And that sounds great. But what you really need, and the first thing I encourage my own clients to do is, I want to be the person that you no longer need to call because you have healed the wound and you're across the bridge. So I'm the person that you get to dump all your anxiety on, your fears on. You call me when you need to. We talk through the moments. We work through the issues. We roadmap through your emotions. And I'm your safe space. And that's what I recommend that you find, is someone who has no vested interest in anything except creating a safe box for you to dump all the stuff in that you're afraid of. And as you work with that person, you will find that the fear starts to get less and less. And again, as slow as or as fast as you want. And that's the good thing about working with someone who is impartial and neutral, is that we have no timeline. We want to help you get to where you want to get to as fast as you can get there. Whereas a friend is more likely to help you keep wallowing in the misery, maybe a little bit longer than is actually necessary. And so when you don't have your confidence, our job is to give you your confidence. Our job is to mine that confidence for you, help you find it, pick it up, dust it off, and start to wear it again as if it's real. And eventually it will be real and you'll have your confidence back. And if you're afraid because you've not been on your own for 20 years, you know, this is coming after a 25 year marriage or 10 years together, 15, and you just don't know if you can do it. Can I do this? The person that is your safe space helps you realize that you can. They help you understand your process of getting to the yes that you need to get to take the next steps that you need to take. So I am a huge proponent of getting third-party help, a neutral third-party counselor, confidant, whatever you want to call it. That's the first thing. And the second thing is a change of environment. You're not going to find your fear. You're not going to find a way to get rid of your fear in the same spot you're standing in. You simply can't. And as hard as that sounds, and it's really difficult sometimes to think about giving away or losing the things that have become so comfortable to us, but it's very difficult to lose the fear of something that you're still living in. It's almost impossible, actually, to stop being afraid of something that you see every single day. And that is a constant reminder every single day of what you are afraid of. And so beginning to think about where your next home is, your next landing place is, your next safe space is the second thing I encourage my clients to do.
When did you start your podcast? And I guess what prompted you to do it?
Oh gosh. Okay. So I think I actually opened the site 2 years ago, 2017, maybe 3 years ago. And then I just let it sit. I think I did the same thing you did, was like started something. And then I was like, I don't know what's happening with that thing. Whatever. And then it morphed. So it was one thing for a while. And I was talking again, I like the sound of my own voice. So I was talking about what I was thinking about, or what I was feeling about, and the energy behind emotions and feelings. And then I let it die again. Then I pick it up again and I write this book and I think, okay, this is going to be great. I'm going to write this book and then I'm going to go on this podcast and I'm going to talk about the practical side of getting divorced and all these tips and things of that nature and help people figure this stuff out. And what's actually turned out to be is me trying to talk about the myths surrounding getting a divorce and the mindset of divorce and the emotional changes and the just all these things that people just weren't talking about. And so when I started this journey of writing the first book, So You're Getting Divorced, I wrote it for me. It was all the questions that I had asked myself and I had to go find out answers to. So it's one part really practical stuff and, you know, things like you need an attorney. Yes, yes, you do. Okay. and here are some things you might want to keep in mind, but also myths that I kept encountering that I didn't understand why we believed this thing in a certain way. And so that was fine, but it was very dry. And one of the things that my tagline is, divorce might be messy, but we just don't have to be. And I wanted to, I mean, I'm just not the kind of person who thinks that pain has to be your only teacher. And I started this podcast in the hopes that if I can talk you through some of the painful points and then show you some of how you can live in the happiness points instead, then I think that women will recover faster. I think women will find that fear you're talking about. I think they'll get over that a lot faster. That confidence piece, I think they'll get there a lot quicker if they can hear someone else saying, you know what, this actually doesn't have to hurt that badly. If you don't want it to, it doesn't have to. Like the world says this is supposed to hurt, but it doesn't actually have to hurt if it doesn't hurt you. And that's okay. So about 3 years ago, I got a wild hair and opened an Anchor account. And about a year ago, I got a really wild hair and started taking it seriously. And now here I am.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to recommend that my listeners listen to your podcast, because I think even though the name of it is So You're Getting Divorced, right, that can apply to a divorce from any situation. It doesn't have to be a marriage that you're getting divorced from. It could be any relationship, right? Could be a relationship with a significant other, your life partner, you're not married. It could be a divorce from a job that you don't like. Could be a divorce from a family relationship, from a toxic relative.
Oh, yes. I mean, I talk about friendships a lot on the podcast, and the unfortunate reality that sometimes the best people that you the best people in your life are actually not the best people in your life. And you're carrying around this baggage because you think you're supposed to, because you've been friends forever and oh, they know all these secrets. I mean, I talk about that, this idea that we're going to divorce a lot of things in our lifetime. And so you're getting divorced may have started as an idea about how to help married women get from being broken in pieces to finding peace in themselves. But really that's for everybody who comes out of something feeling broken and really wants to find peace in themselves.
I agree. So thank you so much for being here and being thank on you. My show. I really appreciate this. Has been an eye-opening experience. No pun intended.
Thank you. No, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to your listeners. I really appreciate it, Dr. Cindy. I much respect to you, and I'm so glad to have finally gotten a chance to see you and meet you. So this is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yes. Dr. Sashin and I have been acquaintances through a group for and how many years has it been?
Oh, it's been a few years.
A few years, and this is our actual first personal meeting face to face.
Yeah.
Thanks to Zoom.
Thanks to Zoom. Hooray.
So I'd just like to thank Dr. Sashin again for being here. And everyone, if you are having any issues, if you think that you're in a relationship in any way, shape, or form with a narcissist, then please go to Amazon, get Dr. Sashin's book, and I have her information. Actually, let us know how my listeners can contact you. What's the easiest way if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, the easiest way to connect with me one-on-one is through my Facebook page, which has the Messenger app you set up, so you can always contact me there, and also my email, which is support@sashinmobley.com. And it's just the easy peasy. And yes, the books are both available on Amazon.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to reading your book, the new one.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Cindy.
And I'd like to thank my listeners again for tuning in for this week's episode of Reignite Your Flame. I look forward to seeing you all next week. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving if you are in the United States. Stay healthy, stay safe, and I'll see you soon.